Hi, we're back. Thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast, a football fans podcast, and the people behind CelticUnderground.net. People might say my life is in a rut. I'm quite happy with what I've got. People might say that I should strive for more, but I'm so happy I can see the point. Things happening here today. We've got one of these in a wee while. Life and various other bits and pieces have got in the way. It's a podcast where it's just a couple of Celtic fans talking about Celtic. So it's myself and usual guest Mark Cooper, along with, if you listen to the Celtic Rock and Roars podcast, you'll remember Stephen, or you'll be aware of Stephen. Well, he's making his Celtic Underground podcast debut. Now, the first 7 or 8 minutes of audio, Mark's microphone is pretty quiet, but if you can just bear with it for that period of time, it picks up after that. Basically, we pause it, he realises that his speakers, his headphones and stuff are slightly coming out of his laptop, so he plugs them back in. Anyway, we are really just trying to talk about what it is that some of the games have not been so appealing this season. 11 nil-nil draws, 6 of them at Celtic Park. We hope it's not too negative. We do talk about the fact that it might come across as negative. It's not the intention. It's just Celtic fans talking about it's not quite been as we would have liked. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady with him, Mark Cooper and debutante Stephen Ray. So we finally come back with a podcast that we've not had a podcast just chatting about football for ages. So before we start, I need to make sure that the guests know more about football than the pundits on BT Sport. So, quick question. Can you be offside when the opposition player has played the ball forward?
Well, I actually thought he did play it forward, but I've just realised that it was a Liverpool player, so no. I think you need two defenders behind the.
Aye, but it doesn't matter if the defending player plays the ball, you could have no players and you're onside.
Aye. But when I was watching it, I didn't realise it was Milner that played it back. So I was a bit confused.
For your reference, Mark, it took BT Sport 25 minutes to work out that the Man City offside goal was onside.
Is that right?
And one of the pundits.
Even by the time that Guardiola was moaning to a referee, they hadn't realised.
I don't know. Apparently, because I just left the room just as Guardiola was complaining, they then said, and we might revisit the Man City goal, but to give you an idea, one of the pundits on BT Sport is a ref. And they didn't go to him until the 50th minute. And it was that thing. Used to bug my tits when someone would score a goal and John Motson would be commentating, and at the first time you see it, you think, that took a deflection. And then you see it from behind the goal, and it was going the opposite direction. And about the fourth replay, John Motson would say, do you know, I think that may have taken a deflection. And you'd be sitting there going, of course it bloody did.
Is he still around, Motson?
I don't know.
He's had about like 5 retirements.
He has. I don't know, Stephen, do you know if he's still around?
John Motson, I think he's now retired. I think he retired just recently.
I think he retired the first time from live commentary, and then and the second time he's retired from highlights.
Well, I think he was doing five live stuff as well, so I think he retired for that about a year ago.
He had the radio retirement as well.
he's one of these commentators that annoys me because he laughs at everything he says. So.
Well, you think, and he also thinks that he's talking to stupid people.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough of that. It's obviously the way we do the podcast as well. But the other thing about this that I was just thinking about, a refereeing stuff. See if this ref, if we got this standard of refereeing in SPL games. We'd have games abandoned because there was too many players sent off.
Well, this is the same referee that refed us away, Zenit.
I thought I recognised him.
he was happy to give away, give yellow cards out, and then ignored the guy who fouled Kouassi on, right on the half-time whistle, who should have went, and he ignored it.
But he was given... The young Liverpool player got a booking. And it was, you know, on the telly, you know, much as I've just bemoaned the fact that they're useless pundits, on the telly, it was all, you know, nobody was disputing that it was a booking for the Liverpool player. It was not quite as bad as what the Hamilton player did on Sunday, that BT Sports pundits were all saying was a soft yellow and he shouldn't have gone.
Yeah, it's what you said. I can't remember the term you used a few weeks ago, but it's that sympathy referee.
Yeah.
If that was a term you used, where they just kind of think, it's just a young boy from Hamilton. It's fine. It's probably a yellow, but, you know, give the boy a break.
He's playing against Celtic. They're going to win anyway. Yeah. Just. I mean, I actually think, you know, we'll get on to the team in a minute. But I actually think one of the selling points of Celtic bringing in players, you know, trying to get loan players like Masonda and Patrick Roberts, I don't know if you'd be as blunt as this, but it's almost as if you could go and say, look, you've got a really creative player there who's only played, you know, he's not played big first team football a lot, and he needs to learn how to look after himself, and if he comes to Scotland, he'll get booted to Kingdom Come. So he'll learn how to deal with getting kicked all over the park, because the referees won't book players. He'll get fouled over and over again. The referee won't book him. So actually, he'll learn how to look after himself. I mean, I think Paddy Roberts has learned that once you get kicked 20 times, you just got to keep getting up and playing.
It's kind of old school football, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not my... I've been a bit facetious about that principle. Yeah. But anyway, on to the last two games. So, Mark, have you had a chance to see how shite Celtic played against Hamilton and Dundee?
I had the annoying thing where I was out early in the morning watching a youth game on the Sunday morning when Celtic were playing, and I did the likely lads thing of trying not to find out the score, and then about it must have been the last like 10 minutes of the game, and I got a text message through from my dad just going mental. and so he's just talking about the game, and so then I thought, when you told me that I was going to be on the podcast, I thought, oh god, now I'm going to have to watch the full game, see how bad we were, knowing the score, knowing it was a dull game. And so earlier on today I watched the full game, and the first 15 minutes we were good.
Mm-hmm.
Like first 10 seconds Dembele should score, maybe we had another chance after that, McGregor scores after 3 minutes, the next 10 or so we're playing pretty decent football, and Cham has a decent shot for once, and then they get that goal kind of from nothing. It's kind of like pinball after I think it was a goal kick or something.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bit of pinball in midfield, the guy kind of hooks it over Ayer's head, and then boy, he runs through and goes and scores. And then after that, yeah, for the next half hour or whatever, it wasn't terrible. It just started to tail off.
Yep.
And then Griffith scores like right after the break, and we're 2-1 up against a team that doesn't want to come out, and it just turns into a kind of turgid, uninspired, no one really wants to do anything, and it just peters out into a pretty uninspiring game.
Stephen,
yes,
what was your thoughts on the Hamilton game?
It's kind of been, it kind of sums up Celtic season in a way. It's been a bit lackluster, lacked a bit of energy, but I think when Celtic got ahead, it was almost as if, you know, we're happy with this. We've got a couple of big games coming up. You know, Hamilton don't want to lose a shitload of goals. I'm not sure what the goal difference is down towards the bottom of the league. They've got a 5 points gap. Mm. It was almost as if they were happy to just, you know, we'll give you the ball, but we're not letting you come any further. but we won't attack you. It was almost kind of, you know, what in the World Cup you used to get years ago when teams were happy, they knew they were through kind of thing, you know, and they just sit off, and that's just how it felt. I think Celtic have took a bit of criticism for the performance, but I don't think you can look too much into it. The pitch is terrible. You know, they don't want to run risk of injury. There's big games coming up. It's just job done, you know. Earlier in the season, we showed that we can, if we want to really turn it on there, we can, you know. But I don't think you can look too much into it. But it was a bit, I don't know, I ended up kind of doing other things while the game was on. It was kind of that way. It was a bit uninspiring.
But, I mean, in isolation, everything you've said, I agree with. The issue I've got is take it out of isolation and put it in the context of it followed an almost identical tight performance against Dundee and followed, you know, your point about it's a big season, we're coming to the end of a really big season. But I feel like virtually every game this season, or a large number of games this season, I have been thinking that. I've been thinking, right, okay, we've got that European game coming up, or we've got that game coming up, so that'll explain the performance. What do you think, Mark?
Well, yeah, at least about half the games this season have been kind of like that. And it seems to me that the players know they can play 60% and they should win.
Mm-hmm.
And the level of teams like, you know, Ross County, Hamilton, a few others down the bottom, it's pretty poor stuff.
Yeah.
There's barely a player who can put a foot on the ball, you know, has any sort of composure or whatever. So, like, these guys are like turning up, they're winning. But, you know, everyone kind of knows what it is. We're playing very mediocre teams. And we have good players who are not kind of pushing themselves to beat them.
Do you know, it's almost as if last season we had the real effort to go for the invincible record. And then this season, we dropped a couple of points and the players suddenly thought, wait a minute, we can get away with dropping our level of performance and still win the league. I mean, I may be putting too much thought into it and it's not as thought through as that, but that's what it feels like. What do you think, Stephen?
I think when the record went against Hearts, I think you started to see a real drop-off, because you still had a bit of urgency, even in the games that we didn't play well, like at Hibs at home and St Johnstone, we were still, you know, pushing to try and get something back. There was almost as if there's something to play for, but when that record went, it almost has felt as if a weight came off the players' shoulders, but it's almost as if they've relaxed too much. And, I mean, they've managed to get up for the Aberdeen game, although it wasn't a great performance on a pretty bad pitch. They turned up for the Rangers game, but I don't know, it's almost as if they feel that they can turn it up when they have to for the bigger games, but there'll be a game when, you know, where that can't happen, you know, it just won't happen, it won't click, something won't come off, and that's my
Who
fear.
Who have we got next?
actually my irritation this season. I'm not, you know, everybody says don't compare it with last season because last season was so exceptional. So I'm not comparing it with last season. I'm comparing it with every big domestic game this season where they've turned up and put in the performance that they needed to. That's actually frustrated me even more because it's showing that they can play like that. I actually went to the press conference after the Dundee game and then recorded 5 minutes of audio, and I didn't put it out because I thought it was far too negative, because after the Dundee game is the angriest I've been for about 2 seasons in a Celtic performance. Because the word I used in the recording was, I thought it was unprofessional. And I just thought people might misunderstand what I would mean by that, and that they might think I'm sort of implying that players were deliberately doing something. But what I mean is, Sinclair, Dembele and Griffiths kept being offside. That's just not really focusing on your job in hand, being a bit lazy. and we had about 15 shots that ended up about 20, 30 feet over the bar. Well, you hit the ball 20, 30 feet over the bar when you don't have your heel up and your toe down and you don't get your body over the ball and you just lean back and you just swing your leg at it. Well, doing it that often, for me, is unprofessional.
It's almost like a kind of attitude as it's only Dundee, it'll come eventually, the goal will come, and then when it doesn't come, you know, they're kind of looking around at each other, wondering what happened. I think the selection as well, I mean, they should have went with Roberts in the game against Dundee, you know, why bring Missonda up if you're not going to play him at home to Dundee, who regularly concede a lot of goals. It's, I don't know, I think some of the selections have been uninspiring as well.
What's just for so that people can understand what's going on, it's now Roma 3, Barcelona 0.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Leave the podcast and
come back. Making it 4-4 on aggregate.
And they will go through.
Me and Roma will go through on the away goals.
Roma are a good side. I watch a lot of Italian football, so people underestimate the strength of the league, I think.
In fact, no, I'm just going to go on about Barcelona for a bit, but I won't bother.
Go on, go on, go on. Pretend we're 90 minutes cynic and we talk about more than just Celtic. Exactly.
So I remember, like, my brother and I speaking about Barcelona when Guardiola was in charge and Xavi and Iniesta, blah blah blah. And he was saying to me, it's going to be really weird when this Barcelona team is gone and we just go back to football as it was before. We have, like, better teams and whatever, but it's not at the same level.
Yeah.
And, like, this Barcelona team, like, even, like, when they had Villanova and Martino and whatever, and they had maybe had 7-8 of the same players, and the most important players as well, and it just wasn't the same. It's like watching, like, new Simpsons episodes, where you're like, ah, the characters are there, but it's not funny anymore. It's just, like, it's done.
Right, I'll so Barcelona are the Simpsons of European football.
Yes, Simpsons after like series 6 or 7 or something, and it's just it's nothing. I'm about to talk. I'm like criticising how uninspiring Barcelona is, and we're about to talk about Celtic Hampden again, but it's not great stuff.
So. What's the difference?
I find European football really weird just now. The last like 5 years, I find it really weird.
In what way?
Because in the way that, say, when I was growing up, in the, say, like a team like Fiorentina or something, and for 5-6 years they would have Rui Costa and Batistuta, and they could kind of beat anyone on their day.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now the equivalent of Rui Costa and Batistuta will be like James Rodriguez or whatever, and he'll be on the bench at Munich. And, you know, like, there's examples of this everywhere, where, like, Paris Saint-Germain, Munich, you know, Real and Barcelona and whatever, like, Aguero is on the bench tonight. And so you don't get the same kind of level of competition all the way through.
I had this conversation with a friend recently, and it was when Celtic were playing, probably back in the Martin O'Neill era, when we drew like a Villarreal. You would look at Riquelme and Sonny Anderson, they're the danger men, but the rest of the players were probably on a par with what we had, but the difference was they had two players that were that bit more exceptional than what we had, and where the difference, these players are, these equivalent players are now sitting on the bigger team's bench.
Yeah, exactly. And when we had that team, say we're playing like Man United or even AC Milan or something, the subs of United or Milan weren't better than our best players.
No. It's almost a harvested, the biggest and best teams have harvested all the players. It used to be they'd have 2 or 3 much better than you, but now 1 to 11 is just so much better. You know,
like 1 to 15, 16.
Which is the problem of creating the gulf of the elite clubs. because the elite clubs have got, we discussed this before, Martin, the podcast, the elite clubs have got player level 1 and 2. And so the next tier of club have got player level 3, whereas previously the elite clubs had player level 1 and player level 3 stroke 4 making up their squad. Yeah. Their squad is now player level 1 and player level 2. And so the next tier down is player level 3 and player level 4. And so it just creates a much wider... That's how the gulf... That's why you're seeing in the group stages of the Champions League, the seeds 1 and 2 are racing away and seed 3 on the odd group is competing, but then seed 4 is a million miles away.
Yeah, yeah. I grew up in England, and I used to have like conversations like from primary school and secondary school about like the quality of Celtic and whatever. And I'd be watching like, say Tottenham would have like Jason Dozell and David Howells and Justin Edinburgh, and I'm like, you're seriously not trying to claim they're better than John Collins and Paolo Di Canio? Come on! And like, you'd be in these conversations with them. Whereas now, like a young like Celtic fan in England just now who's having that same conversation, you know, it's completely different now.
Yeah.
Like, the level of English football is a championship. The level of their, you know, actual football, the players they produce, and with three players kind of added on to championship squads. Whereas now it's just an international league.
It was probably for the sort of tail end of Stratton's era that this golf started to really kick in. That's when because I think the English TV money actually went down quite a bit during the sort of early 2000s, and then it seemed to ramp right up. So it's annoying because we're just getting left behind. I think the Europa League is probably a true reflection of the rest of Europe. It's quite a hard competition to pick a winner. Mm-hmm. I fancy Lazio, everybody else is saying Atletico Madrid, but you know, but anybody in that last eight could win it, really.
It is funny how we've picked this time to have this conversation as Roma about to knock out Barcelona.
Although since Roma made it 3-0, it is all Barcelona. But, you know, again, it was hit home to the point we were just discussing, and you saying, Stephen, about the Europa League was hit home. It was 15 years ago tonight that Celtic drew 1-1 with Boavista in the first leg of the UEFA Cup semi-final. There is no way that the semi-final of the Europa League in the foreseeable future would be Celtic versus Boavista or clubs of that level.
No.
Because even the Europa League now, as you're looking at it, and it's teams that were on a par with us in Champions League football 10, 12 years ago. So your point about the Strachan era when it started to really happen. And it's when you then started to get fringe clubs from nowhere leagues having some oligarch decide to chuck $1 billion into it. That's when it sort of happened. Back onto the Celtic. And obviously,
we're kind of went at a rant there.
But I mean, we've discussed, you know, what the mentality might be that's causing an issue. And the style of play, again, I was watching the Man City Liverpool game, and I was watching when both teams have got the ball and they're passing about the back, how they're being pressed so high up the park. And I was thinking, for me, that's one of the things we've just not done this season, is press opposition teams high. We're just getting back to the when we suddenly realised we could play at 60% and still win. We're just letting them have the ball and pass about, because they'll give it to us anyway. At one point in the second half at Hamilton, the possession stats for the game were 95% Celtic.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just incredible.
I started to hear conversations about, you know, this is still Dyla's team and Rodgers' signings are starting to become called into question. I mean, I think out of all the signings he's made, you could probably say Ncham, Sinclair and Dembele have been the successes, but there's a load of players in behind that that have not really done anything and kind of went missing. So I think this season, I think this summer definitely needs a real sort of freshen up. So I think some players need to go and definitely some new blood in.
Well, first of all, because I'm going to get on to that, because Mark, I can't remember whether it was a WhatsApp conversation we had, or whether you put it on Twitter about some of our players that we were, I think it was a WhatsApp conversation, about some of our players that we...
That's confidential.
About signing...
I told you that.
Signing loan players.
Yeah.
But first of all, what are the big differences that you're seeing about the way that we are playing? I mean, obviously, the mentality we just talked about, but you can be mentally down and still playing in a certain way.
Yeah, well, for one thing, apart from the mentality, just as a kind of personal preference, I don't really like theatre back. And I don't think it's that conducive to playing playing out from the back either. And although it sounds kind of contradictory, I think there are less passing options when you have theatre back than when you have four.
Mm-hmm.
Because... And I'm even like I'm talking about forward passing options here, because if you have four at the back, the two fullbacks go up to right in the touchline, almost the halfway line, say, almost in that midfield line.
Yeah.
The two centre backs split out wide, and say Brown is the pivot, to use that jargon, comes in and distributes the ball,
mm-hmm.
and he basically has two defenders behind him and the goalkeeper. So he has, say, what, seven passing options?
Yep.
So if there's three at the back, so what, in Hamilton, against Hamilton, it was Boyata on the left, Ayer in the centre, and Hendry on the right.
Yep.
And then Brown, say, is like 10 metres in front of Ayer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if Ayer passes to Brown, he hasn't really taken anyone out, because a team like Hamilton are just sitting back in.
Yeah.
So, like, Brown gets a ball, if it is passed to Brown gets a ball on a half turn with someone right on him immediately, and he has to give it back to Ayer.
Yeah.
Even if he does have, like, time on the ball, that they've gone back so far back that they're not even contesting it going to Brown at that point, instead of Brown passing to seven passing options
mm-hmm.
in a back four situation, he's passing to six.
Yeah.
So it just isn't as conducive. And even like defensively, well, say if you have four at back and say like one of the fullbacks, say Kieran's taking the ball up and we've lost it at that point. Well, Lustig is still tucked in anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same situation. So you still have three at back regardless.
Yeah.
And even what on and against very good teams that say like will have, you know, high quality, high wide players, they will just go behind that fullback or the wing back all day.
Yep.
And they'll just go into that vacated spot. And even a team as like limited as Hamilton, they almost scored that way. Mm-hmm. It's like the only chance they created apart from the goal was they passed it quickly. One of their players had gone out high left. They passed it quickly to him. This is at the end of the first half, if everyone remembers. And the guy immediately crosses it in. And Hendry can't come across quickly enough. The guy crosses it in. And the ginger kid has a chance from like 7 yards out that just goes past the post.
Yeah.
So like... there's always that space. A back three doesn't cover the whole width of, or isn't likely. And so I don't really see the great advantage of it in, you know, building up play or even defending. Because even defending, Lustig would be there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Tierney's plays a bit further up. So, like, I said this before, that I would prefer us to go back to a system we were playing before. And maybe about a month or two ago when I was on the podcast, I was saying that although Ncham's a good player, I actually prefer Brown kind of being that pivot player
mm-hmm.
and him dominating, you know, like he distributes and then it's more fluid that way
yeah.
than have kind of like Armstrong running forward and whatever and a lot of passing options. And while I was saying and Cham's a good player, and he looks as though he's developing and developing, and he was getting a decent understanding with Rogic in the Rangers game, that I want Brown to be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would like us to return back to that system again.
I think, with
Tierney going up all the time.
You mentioned in Cham there, since we've went more three at the back, I've seen less of his pass to Tierney, where it's that pass that he splits the fullback and the right-sided centre-back. I think because Sinclair would come in, he occupies the centre-back and Tierney's able to run beyond. I think I don't see that pass as often for Cham, which has been the one basically to be scored against Anderlecht. He's made that numerous amounts of times, and Tierney's on it a lot, but I agree, I'm not a fan of the three at the back, unless you're playing an absolute up front two, like under the O'Neill era, but we don't even do that. You know, we're not playing this a big guy, wee guy, you know, we're kind of playing Edouard Duke towards the left and still playing with one up front, so it's, it can be a bit congested in the midfield as well, so...
It may also explain, because the thing that really struck me was a minute into the second half against Hamilton, Sinclair goes to the byline, puts a cross in, and we score. For the remaining 45 minutes plus injury time of the game, when Sinclair got level with the box, he cut inside, because that's what he does. Problem is, Hamilton had three guys on him. So when he cut inside, there was one guy ready in case he went down the line, but two for him to cut in. And so he just runs into a wall. Last season, playing four at the back, Tierney overlaps. So 1 minute, possibly two of those Hamilton players have to go with Tierney. They don't have to because Tierney's not overlapping because we've not got the attacking fullback. So as a consequence, Sinclair gets overloaded. And it just seems very... going through the whole season has felt at times domestically like going through the motions.
Just the annoying thing about it is that you have that, and then you have the situation that we touched upon in Europe, that the gulf is now so big that there's not really much of an in between. Like if you're in a situation where you're playing against teams like Zenit,
yep,
who are more or less our level,
they're maybe a wee bit better.
But you know, like, there's the game's going back and forth all the time and whatever.
If we played them 10 times, we'd probably beat them 4. You know, that kind of...
Exactly, and then you have that kind of satisfaction. You can kind of gauge the level of the team.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now we're playing against teams that, you know, would be in big nations, would be in a third tier, like Hamilton.
Yep.
So it's that kind of, you know, weird position that you're kind of watching. You're watching a whole season, and nothing's really resolved. It's like, well, we know we're not as good as those guys, but we're not as bad as those guys.
Do you know? I said to someone that this season reminds me of. I'm not a massive Simple Minds fan, but I don't dislike Simple Minds. You know, that's a. I always remember the first time I heard Belfast Child by Simple Minds. And listening for the first wee bit and thinking, wonder when this is going to get going. Okay, I'm sure it'll get going in a minute. And then after about 2.5 minutes thinking, that's the song, that's it. And this season has felt like, okay, I'm prepared that you know, we're all expecting last season was the invincible season, but this season we may not win every game, but the style of football, and we'll maybe see more of the young players coming through. So when we've got Champions League qualifying happening, you think, well, you know, performances aren't great because we've got Champions League qualifying. Then the Champions League qualifying's out of the way and we've got the group stages, and, well, the domestic performances won't be that great because we've got the group stages, and we're saving the players for the group stages. But as you say, Mark, we're so far away from the group stage people that we get a doing anyway. And the domestic game's nothing. And then, well, once the European football's out of the way, the season will really get going. And you're now in April thinking, no, that was it.
Yeah.
And the point you made, Stephen, about the team against Dundee in particular was a Ronnie Dyler team in terms of the personnel.
Yeah, I think you can go to the well one too many times with the same players, and it's just, I don't know, it's hard to, it feels like a bubble, it feels like a balloon that's slowly deflating. It's like, you know, you're waiting for something to happen, and I think after the Rangers game you were expecting it to really kick on, because it was such a gutsy sort of performance to, you know, we didn't play well at the back, we've still won the game with 10 men and, you know, and absolutely bust their season, yet we, the next game we go and draw 0-0 with a 10 man Mullerwell, and then we beat Ross County, and then you think, well, let's kick on again, and it just, it's like one game in, one game out. It's pretty frustrating to watch. So I was thinking about this the other day. This was before I knew I was coming on the pod, and I was trying to sort of think back to another sort of time or team that kind of went through this. And Rangers in 92-93 won the treble. I think that was the season they went quite far in the Champions League and stuff. But the next season they were going for a double treble, and I remember, I think we beat them quite late on, and I think Walter Smith said at the time that the sort of last 10 games they started to lose and draw, and they just couldn't get it going again, and eventually they ended up losing that cup final to Dundee United, and I'm not, hopefully that's still going to be us, but it's possible it's happening, you know, there's going to come a game where we're expected to win, it's a big game, and we just don't turn up, whereas previously we have. I just can't see how you can switch it on and off.
Well, let me ask both of you this question, because somebody suggested this to me, and I say, so should Brendan Rodgers have split up the Invincibles last summer, Mark?
Yes.
Well, Stephen, you can go then.
Hi. Sorry, I just. I was a 2-footed challenge straight in.
I'm quite happy. Carry on.
At the time, I thought, this is as much, I don't think this team will ever be any better than that. And I mean, it was an incredible season and what they did. But I remember thinking at the time, this team needs to now become Brendan Rodgers' team. I think we've maximised the Ronnie Dyler team. I think we could see in Europe that we were capable of competing to a level, but we definitely needed a bit more. We just never got it, I don't think. I think we kind of, it was almost as if, how can I break up a team that's just done this? Let's give them the chance to go into the Champions League and see if they can kick on. And I just don't think it was ever going to happen, especially with the draw we got, you know.
But, okay, so what are we talking about, though? Because, like, you know, most successful teams will renew their team, and that basically means, you know, like putting in two good players or something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's ever, like, if we go through the actual team, I don't think it's that, like, feasible that we were going to, like, break it up. You got, like, Kieran, obviously, no. Gordon, they should have accepted a £4.5 million bid from Chelsea.
He's worth more, yeah, because that's more than we would probably say that he's currently worth at his age and his injury record.
Yeah. Gordon, yeah. Lustig? Yeah, we could have replaced Lustig a year in advance and then had someone properly competing with him, but they obviously thought that Ralston was going to be that guy.
Yeah. Which is odd. Can I touch on Ralston in a minute? Because I find it really odd. He looked like Brendan fancied him. He played him against PSG, and he's had opportunities to play him. You know, he then got injured, and he's had opportunities to play him since then. He's come back into the squad, or he's come back to fitness, hasn't really gotten the squad, and he's been punted to Dundee United on loan. It's an odd one. It's almost as if something happened to Brendan, thought, do you know what, I don't think he is going to make it, and just has ditched him. Carry on. And then of course there's Brendan's right back signing of Gamboa.
Yeah, but this is the thing about, you know, assigning signings to individuals within the club, it's always pretty difficult to actually, you know, decipher who's been buying who. Apart from, you know, some circumstances, if it's a player who he's been with for, you know, like one or two clubs or something. But so when Gamboa came in, what was the situation? It was like a deadline night signing or something like that?
I think so, aye.
I think, well, his first game was in the Nou Camp.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be surprising if they're going through the kind of list of guys who are going to be under £1 million or something, that Lustig's going to be our number one. Here are the reserves. Who do you think? And they take a punt on the guy.
Yeah.
So, but the weird. So then if we go back, because we're kind of complaining that we haven't like renewed the team.
Yeah.
But we signed Ebouri, Kouassi, and Olivier Ncham for a combined amount of £7 million.
Yep.
We had, so at the end of last season, we would have had Simunovic, Boyata, Sviatchenko, Ayer had been at Kilmarnock and wasn't really considered that he was going to be featuring much. Anyone else?
Nir Beaton was our centre half as well.
Yeah. Oh, poor Nir. And up front, we had Dembele, who we weren't selling. We're waiting until this summer to sell.
Yeah.
And we brought in Edouard as a third guy with Griffiths there. Now, my problem is that I think we should sell better.
Yes.
So in January, we had that thing with Gordon that we mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And that apparently was like a concrete bid of £4.5 million.
Yep.
There was also, like, in the newspapers, there's also explicitly they said that Leicester City have bid for Eric Sviatchenko.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if that bid actually came through, but it was in the papers. It wasn't like rumoured interest. It was a bid has come in for Eric Sviatchenko. Yep. It's a weird one that we didn't sell. Because you could see, like, Sviatchenko wasn't even in the team anymore.
Mm-hmm. In the summer, I read somewhere that it was a Danish interview that was translated that he said he was told after the end of the January transfer window that Leicester had made a bid for him.
Yeah. And he actually had, I'm probably going to slightly make up this stat, but he had the most amount of interceptions in the Champions League group stage. He was, of that table, he was third.
Mm-hmm.
And Brown was number one. And I'm talking about every team
in
that Champions League group stage. So Leicester might, you know, they might have been going through all these stats and thought, oh, that's exactly what we need. We play a, like, low defensive line. We need someone who can, you know, read the game and intercept or something like that. And they came up with Eric. So if that actually did come in and we rejected it with him not being a Rodgers player, that's a pretty poor decision.
Yeah.
I think what's crazy about that is Sviatchenko had actually played quite a lot of games up to that point, up to the Rangers game at Ibrox, and I think he sold the first goal where I think it was a bit of a bad pass across. And it was ever since that game where he started to fall out and Boyata started to come in. And then it was, obviously, Suminovic was in and out, now depending on the pitch or whoever, how many games in a row he'd played. But Sviatchenko, up to end of December, had played a lot of games, especially in the Champions League, and played in the Cup semi against Rangers, and I think he played in the 5-1 as well. So, you know, it wasn't as if he was completely at the picture. So I don't know if it was a case of let's hang off and see if he comes back. But he just never really came back for that.
But I don't think it's like his physique and lack of pace and the fact he's slow on the turn. Like, I didn't mind Sviatchenko, but you could kind of see that the kind of little things that Rodgers was saying, and that in the same way how he talks about Hendry.
Yeah.
Despite Hendry not really, you know, being that convincing so far, but you can kind of see there's a kind of you can see a logic in him looking at this boy and thinking, I can turn... He has kind of the raw attributes and I can teach him how to be a good defender.
Yeah,
whereas Sviatchenko is a better defender, but never had that potential.
He's like a Home Bargains John Stones kind of player. Almost. He's got the same attributes, but just not at that level.
But I'm just wondering if also Brendan can be a bit, and Martin O'Neill could be a bit like this, and Stratton could be a bit like this. A player who he's not 100% comfortable with makes a mistake, and he's finished with him.
He's done.
So Sviatchenko makes a mistake in the Rangers game, and he's finished with him. And so Aboué comes into the team in the winter there, and our midfield starts to become some combination of in different positions on the Aboué and Cham and Brown is the three in the middle of the park, particularly for games where you need physicality. Aboué's at fault for the second Zenit goal and hasn't played for the team since, struggling to get on the bench.
Same with Gamboa in the Bayern game. I mean, he was roasted by Coleman in the first half, although he'd done a lot better in the second half, but he's pretty much not been seen since that away game at Bayern. So it's almost as if that was last chance saloon against one of the best teams in Europe.
And Effie in Gibraltar.
Yeah, but I do wonder if it's... I mean, I'm not... You know, we all can be a bit less, but I do wonder if... You know, because other players like Jozo can be responsible for three of Hart's four goals in the 4-1 game, and it doesn't happen to him. And he's another one we should have sold into Burnley. He's a guy with half his knee missing, and a bid comes in at £8 million from the English Premiership, which is the only league that's daft enough to ignore a medical and sign a player at that level.
Is that accurate? Is that how much? £8 million?
£8 million. Burnley, aye.
Jeez.
So it's a double your money on a dodgy player. A player with a dodgy knee.
But that's the thing, that's more than, kind of more than, you know, as you know, the emphasis of being as you're buying players, it should be that we have to sell at the right time. Mm-hmm. Because then, say we're selling Sviatchenko for $4 million or something to Leicester. If a Premiership team wants a defender, it's going to be at least $4 million, right? Well, him, Gordon, and Sviatchenko, and what's his name, Stamunovic, that's $16 million there. That's like, then when you're reinvesting, you can actually reinvest at a decent level. You can kind of, you know, bring up, you know, the quality that we're buying when we buy in the two or three players.
I think that's the sort of point about the should we have split up the Invincibles, because I understand that Brendan pretty much went into the new season and said to all the players, this squad is going to play the Champions League qualifiers. So tell your agents that it doesn't matter what bids are coming in. Everybody here is staying because we're playing the Champions League qualifiers. And I think the thought process that I understand he thinks he should have split up the team might come back to your point about it, Mark, that he was thinking, understandably, I can't afford to do anything. We've not got enough time. We've only got 5 weeks between the end of that season and the start of this season. So this is a squad that's going to get me Champions League football. And then once you get the Champions League football and you see people like Dembele and Simonovic, who patently have now found out that they could have gone somewhere else for more money, and I think to themselves, God, I've got a whole bloody season here. Those are the ones that he's thinking, actually, I should have split it up. And when your point, and sold at the right price. I'm wondering if that's as much of it.
Problem I've got with Celtic, even if we did take these bids, we're still shopping. We don't ever seem to want to push the boat out to bring up the level. We sell for... It's like if they turn around and say, oh, if you got 20 to 25 million for Dembele, but Celtic will never spend 10 million on a striker. I've never understood that argument, because if you're willing to sell for 25 million, where are you? You're not going to continue to buy these types of players at bargain basement. You know, we got Dembele on a loophole. Should have been a £7 or 8 million player. You're never going to increase the level, I don't think. You know, we're constantly, if we're going to consistently shop in the 1 to 2 million mark. I know in Cham's probably a wee bit more, but he's you can clearly see the difference in him at that level, buying £4 or 5 million. Potentially with add-ons, you know.
But isn't the challenge that we've got that, in general, a £10 million, £12 million player that we actually, as we just discussed, if we're selling right, we can afford to buy a £10 million, £12 million player. The challenge is his wages are 70, 80 grand a week, and we can't afford that. But the £4 or £5 million player, as we've seen with Ncham, when he arrives at the team, is on a par with what we've already got, because, as we've just discussed, we've got players that we expect to sell for 4 to 10 million quid.
But for me, it isn't even buying, you know, at the like 10, 12 million pound level. It's having, you know, quality throughout the team, that playing Rosenborg in a qualifier, it's a given that we're going through. That you just have that solidity throughout, you know, like 14, 15 players. That you have a £4 million right back to replace Lustig. You have a quality left back. You have a £5 million centre back to accompany, you know, one of the other three we have now. And you just steamroller these small teams. Like, for the last, 8, 10 years, we've been going into Champions League games, and half our players are £1 million, £1.5 million free transfers.
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of struggling. And we're struggling to qualify as well. I know Rodgers has done very well in the last 2 years in qualifying, but before that we hadn't qualified for 2-3 years.
And it was a struggle when we did.
Aye.
So,
this is a very depressing.
Yes. No, I know it is, but it's not meant to be. It's just the reality of, let's be honest, it's not very thrilling at the moment to be watching, and I know, because the Dundee game is the first time I've had a real rant saying this is pish this season, and lots of people came on and said, we're going to win the treble, can he complain about it? And I get both of those. It's like when people used to whinge about the style of football under Stratton and say it will drive people away, and I used to say, yeah, but what can we, you know, can he sack the manager when he's winning trophies? So I get that, and I'm quite sure Brendan Rodgers knows that the team is not playing particularly exciting football. But you're just looking at, what could we do? I mean, the other aspect is, with hindsight, it's easy to say this now, because you don't know he's going to have the injuries, but with hindsight, there is a waste of time, the effort we put into re-signing Patrick Roberts on sticking another year's loan on him.
Yeah.
If we're not going to get to purchase him.
Yeah.
But that's a hindsight thing. But it does then lead to a conversation of, should we be getting players in on loan like that?
Yeah. I disagree. I disagree with having a loan, because of, and it's kind of related to, I know everyone immediately is going to think I'm so close-minded and whatever when I say that, but it's related to what we were kind of speaking about before, that you sell at a high price, as high as you can get, to generate the capital to then be able to compete at a level that we haven't really been able to consistently compete at.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that, like, Benfica and Porto, their wages, Benfica, Porto and the Dutch clubs as well, big Dutch clubs, their revenue streams over a kind of a decade-long period have been fairly similar to ours as well.
Mm-hmm.
But they buy at a higher level and sell at a higher level. Now, if we could get £4.5 million for a 35-year-old goalkeeper,
yep,
a centre back who isn't first choice, and another centre back for £8 million,
mm-hmm,
well, then you sell and then you bring in, you know, a higher level of player.
Yep.
I'm sorry, repeating myself here, to be fair. But
what about you, Stephen? What's your thoughts on loan players?
I think as long as the loan players are perceived to be better than what we have, so, you know, the argument for Sam bringing in Roberts was, you know, he's better than James Forrest, which I agreed with. But we signed Johnny Hayes, and at the time we were signing Johnny Hayes, I was saying, I don't see the point, because I think James Forrest is a better player than Johnny Hayes. So all of a sudden now you bring in Roberts, you get three players for that one position. I think I don't like the team like it was under Mowbray, where we had six or seven lone players, because if things start to go wrong, then you can see that players will start to switch off and they're thinking about going back to their parent club and whatever. But I think we, a couple of players of a high level, I think if you can get them in, then yeah, go for it. But I think three, I think it's probably as much as I'd, I think we're get three at the moment. I think it's Edward, Roberts and Masonda. I don't think there's any other ones other than the three, so I don't think any more than that would be beneficial.
I mean,
you don't want to scupper what you've already got as well.
One thing, when I was speaking there, I completely forgot the loan aspect, which was the actual question. my point about not having the loan players is that you obviously can't sell them.
Uh-huh.
So basically you have a squad of, say, about 16 main players. Some are there for continuity, some are youngsters who you're not going to be selling, you know, in the short, medium term. And so of the other, say, 7-8 players, to then put loans in there and to allocate them game time when you can't make anything on them, and it's only going to be a net loss. Now, no matter how good Roberts is or Masonda is, we're only going to make a net loss on them. So you're just kind of accepting, okay, we're going to have a player who's better than SPL level for, what, 18 months, when we have players who are better than SPL level. We're going to spend, the Belgian newspapers estimated that, according to their source at Chelsea, that we had spent €5 million or more on the Masonda signing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's true, but that's what a Belgian sports website said. Now, whether or not we're not actually playing him anymore, but even if you do play him, then, and you have two others there, then it's actually depriving. It means that we then don't buy a player. We bought Edward, and we're not going to, well, I would assume we're not going to sign him for, what, seven million yep. euro. I'd assume we're not going to sign him, but instead of recruiting someone else who you can develop and then sell on, we're giving minutes to players who we can't make any money off. So it's, although it seems kind of saying, although it's in some ways closed-minded, it's actually really short-term to do that. And it means that Celtic just plateau, because you can't actually generate the extra capital that Celtic need to be competing at a better level. You're always accepting, okay, well, we're the club that has, even though Porto, Benfica, Ajax don't do this, we're the club who bring in a guy for and spend, you know, a few million euro to bring in a guy, and we're not going to make any money off him. Porto will make 20 million off their right winger, but we're not going to do that. We're just going to have a guy here, and we're going to give Man City or Chelsea the money instead.
I think if they come in at the start of the summer and they are the difference of getting in the Champions League and not, then you can say, yeah, but I think all three that we've got in didn't come in until after we'd already qualified. Well, two of them definitely. You know, sorry, one, Edward, I think, came in last minute, and obviously Masonda was in the winter, but Patrick Roberts was in. I think we were already halfway through that tie by the time he came in, so.
Well, that's,
and I was 5-0 up.
I was going to put the point you just made there, Stephen, about is there any merit in. We see your argument of say we had £4 million players for every position, and we loan in the 12, 15 million pound player because we can't afford to buy that. But he then is the spark that's the difference between our team being here and just that wee bit better. Is there any value in that? And then the other type of loan signing is the Edouard one, where everybody says he's a great young talent, but he's not playing first team football for us to see whether we should commit to 7 million euros. So we get him on loan with a guaranteed option to buy at the end of that loan period. Is there any merit in either of those to you, Mark?
It would be ridiculous if I was so dogmatic to say that I wouldn't accept any loan. if Messi said, I tell you what I want to do in the next 2 years, I know I've got a contract at Barcelona, but I want to go to Celtic, I'm obviously not going to do that. But if the difference is bringing in a guy who's going to be, and you're spending quite a lot of money, and you're not recruiting a guy who you can make money off, we're going to win the Scottish League next season. And I think it would be improbable that Musonda is going to be him alone, that he's going to be the difference in us qualifying.
Yep.
And not.
I think
you could suggest it will happen and he might play well and whatever, but you know, like, we have a fairly strong squad, and I think it's doubtful that he'll be, you know, like, streets ahead of everyone, that it's so obvious that, you know, he did that. And in the meantime, you could bring in someone else.
The only other argument is James Forrest is playing some of the best football in his career since Patrick Roberts arrived.
Yeah, that's a fair point. But then that doesn't mean you wouldn't bring in another player. It just means you'd bring in a permanent player. Now you could say that, you know, he won't be of the same quality as well. So I like to argue against myself.
the initial question was obviously, should we have broke up this side last summer, or at least, you know, done a bit more? But do you think Rodgers will jink his mindset on doing that this summer, or do you think it's more or less going to be the same, maybe a couple of others coming in, maybe a couple going out?
I mean, I don't see our first team having seven different players in the main starting 11 to what we're finishing now. But equally, there'll be no Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
If I go through the team from the back forward, You wouldn't be surprised. So Lustig's going to the World Cup, plus he's looking a bit past it. So you wouldn't be surprised if we had a different right back. Boyata's not talking to us about signing a contract and is going to the World Cup, so you wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't there. Simonovic wanted to go in the summer, so you wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't there. Armstrong only signed a one-year extension to his contract, so he's either signing a new contract this summer or he's going. Dembele.
Rodgers only has a year left and is at a World Cup.
He's at a World Cup and wants to go to China, and Chinese want to spend a fortune on him. And Dembele hasn't looked interested this whole season. So I'm certainly not saying they're all going to go, because things like that don't tend to happen. But equally, there's every one of those players you wouldn't be surprised if they weren't there next season. Which would gives us 5 weeks from the cup final to our first Champions League game, I think it is. I think it's 5 weeks or 6 weeks. That's not a lot of time for us.
I'd imagine the first two rounds, looking at, somebody drew up a chart of the potential teams and what leagues they come from. I'd imagine that the first two rounds are going to be pretty straightforward. I think it's just the third round where we met Rosenborg, and then the playoffs, it may get a wee bit more difficult. So I'd imagine I think we'll probably get about 8 weeks to really get some good business done. But what do you think?
What do you think, Mark?
Well, it kind of then it's then kind of slightly strange because we know we have this kind of weird situation, and even Rodgers himself has said that January is the main transfer window for us, or the more important one. So then it's kind of strange that you don't recruit, you know, for the qualifiers at that point, especially if we know that, well, Dembele's going to be off.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if Edouard stayed.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you're talking about, we have Griffiths up front for the qualifier, so you're expecting that we're going to be signing a proper centre forward to be competing with Griffiths, or yep, should be the number one, which is pretty hard to integrate someone like a right back,
unless it's someone Rodgers knows.
Yeah, did you see the Torres thing?
Yeah, I just thought he asked.
I would expect some signings to be coming in. It's such a boring banal thing, yeah, to say. Jeez, Omar.
Well, but don't forget we've got the £1 million compere centre half,
mm-hmm,
who's played one game against Morton in the cup and never, and can't even get the bench.
The only thing he's missing is a red stripy jumper and a pair of glasses, because nobody knows where he is.
It is really, really odd.
Hmm.
But that's another thing where people are on like Twitter or whatever talking about Rodgers' signings.
Yep.
And they're including Comper with it. And you think, just the whole kind of feeling, you're like the feeling I'm getting, like being miles away, it's just like I would be doubtful if that was his signing.
Well, he wouldn't have seen him because he wasn't playing first team football, but Lee Congerton has worked in Germany when he was playing first team football, so Lee Congerton will have seen him play football, and Brendan Rodgers will have just seen clips, you know, the clips that you get on Y Scout, yeah, or whatever system that they use.
Yeah,
so I don't know. It's a strange signing. I was expecting to see a bit more of him up to now. I don't know. Surely didn't judge him. Surely didn't judge him in his first minute against Morton.
No, I suspect he judged him on what he saw in training. We've got the cup semi-final against Rangers on Sunday. So, Mark, what's your expectation from the game?
What's the deal with Rodgers just now? Is he fit? Because he didn't play the other day.
Did you see the stat? Did you see the amazing stat? Of our 11 0-0 games this season, Rodgers has started every one of them.
Sorry.
I've not checked this to verify it. I'm going to put this to see Bobby Peru on Kerrydale Street, put that up, so if he didn't, but I'm sure he started a lot of them.
Did you see a stat when he was at Ibrox, and it was that he hit a ball from 35 yards in into a corner? You see that stat? At the end of the game at Ibrox before, where I think he scored another goal against him?
Yes.
Is that Rodgers?
The guy who started in quite a number of games, if somebody then came along and said, did you know Rogic has been on the park for the last 15 minutes? You'd say, really? Whereabouts was that?
I remember, what is the game? I think it might have been the game last year where he scored at Broomland End. And you tweeting about how anonymous Rodgers was. And I had to go. I think the sad sod that I am, I made up a little video and put it on Twitter to show about four chances he'd created before.
My issue with Rodgers is, I've said it for years, I think he should be coming on as a sub in a game. Because when he starts games, there are large chunks of the game where he is anonymous for 10 minutes at a time. That's my
issue. But then we wouldn't have had this wonder goal against Rangers.
Yeah.
Right. But we would had. You don't know how the game would have panned out because
it's true. But you can have Kouassi Aboué on there instead and see if he'll score a 35 yarder.
Well, the other stat that Bobby Peru then put up.
He'll be more physical. I'll give you that. And he'll run around.
That we've scored four or more goals in eight games this season, and in five of those, the starting midfield was Brown and Chan McGregor.
Sorry. I think what's the game away at Aberdeen?
3-0.
When we absolutely hammered him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think him and McGregor were running the show. So we might not have scored four, but in one of our most difficult games, he controlled the game, and McGregor was good as well.
Roderick's a big game player. He turns up in the big games.
I don't think he's, you know, incredible, but his touch is lovely. His feet are so quick. He regularly scores big goals. What more do you want?
I want him to not lumber through anonymously through games in midweek against Dundee.
Did he play against Dundee? Sorry, I didn't see him.
You didn't see him.
I'm just bringing out my fishing reel here.
You didn't see him.
Fishing reel? What's a fishing reel? Anyway.
I thought you'd seen many folk against Dundee, to be honest.
Right, anyway, where were we? We're talking about the Rangers game, right?
Yes.
What do you expect to see from the Rangers game, Mark?
If Rodgers plays? So it's basically the same situation as it was a month ago, where we're playing rubbish and we're about to play them.
Yep.
I'd be surprised if we played as well as we did that time, and it's slightly disconcerting that we went into that game not playing well and we turned up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's slightly disconcerting that they're thinking, ah, okay, we'll just do that again. Because everyone really needs to be on it. Like, the passing needs to be sharp and quick and whatever. So I wouldn't be surprised if we don't play as well, but we win 2-0.
Because, getting back to the Rogic chat, which has been my frustration this season, because we've got players who I have every expectation they will turn up on Sunday. Big game players. That Dembele will turn up and play well, that Rogic will turn up and play well, that Sinclair
Brown
might do something. I wouldn't be surprised with it being handed if Patrick Roberts plays. I actually was beginning to think, you know, Roberts has been fit since January. I was actually beginning to think that Brendan Rodgers had decided, you know what, he's not my player in a couple of weeks' time, so I'm just not going to bother with him anymore, because I couldn't understand why he wasn't getting a game at all, and then he goes and starts against Hamilton and looks the part. What about you, Stephen?
Well, I'm agreement with Mark in regards to Rogic. I think he should play. I think Dembele, I know there seems to be this thing that when Dembele doesn't have a good game that it's get him out and get Griffiths back in. I still think on his day, I think Dembele's a better player. I just think all round, I think he's a better player. I think he holds it up better. But Griffiths is, you know, I don't think he'll play the both of them, but I think you play the players that have turned up in these games before, and I think Dembele turns up quite often. I think Rogic, Sinclair, I think may start, although he's not been having a great time yet. And I agree with you, I think Roberts will play. I think Forrest has kind of dipped recently. And I think Ncham and Brown will play in the middle of the park. So it's really the concern for me is at the back. Hopefully they go with a four, but I'm not sure what the mix is going to be, other than Tierney at left back. But it's
I wouldn't play Sinclair. I'd play
McGregor,
Rodgers in front of Brown and Chan.
Yeah, possibly.
And let Kieran go up and down.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he does that, because McGregor's starting to turn into a bit like Chris Sutton was for Martin O'Neill. I don't know where I'm going to play him. I just want to make sure that Chris Sutton's in my team.
Yeah.
So he played at centre half. He played in midfield and he played up front. And it's like I heard an interview with Brendan. He was talking about Callum McGregor. He always gives me 7 out of 10. Sometimes I get a bit more, but I never get any less. And he gives me a 7 out of 10. And I think when you've got a player like that, the manager just wants to keep playing him to reward them, because he'll not let him down and he'll do something. So I wouldn't be surprised if McGregor played. What would your starting eleven be? What do you think Brendan's starting 11 would be, Mark?
That basically with say Dembele up front, McGregor, Rogic, and Forrest is fit. Forrest.
Right.
Is he fit?
Aye.
Then Brown and Cham, Kieran, Aya, Boyata, Zolustig. Is he fit?
Yeah, I think so.
And Gordon.
Steven?
You went forward to back there, didn't you?
I know.
I'm starting to get confused.
Dembele go with.
Lackey used to always criticise me because I would name a team and I would go keeper, left back, the two centre halves, and then across the right back. But that's only because I used to be a goalkeeper, so I always see a team from the position of the goalkeeper and go left to right across the.
Do you want a team that I think will start, or do you want a team that I think I would pick?
Give me both. Tell me the team that you think Brendan will do, and then the team that you would go with.
I think he will go Gordon, Lustig, Boyata, Aya, Tierney. I think in the middle he'll play Brown and Cham. I think he'll play McGregor instead of Rogic, and I think he'll play Sinclair, Roberts and Dembele. That's what I think, which is pretty much not far from the team that beat them in the semi-final last year. I think you might see Rogic as a bit of a luxury on that big pitch, you know, maybe an impact player if it's needing something to open up towards the end of the game. I'm on my wife's laptop and I seem to have messages firing through it.
That's all right, can you hear them?
Can you not hear them? That's all right.
It's
annoying me. It's putting me off.
Obviously, the nature of the messages, if it's your wife's laptop, obviously, if they're annoying you, then
the team I'd go with is, I'm not a massive McGregor fan, but I can see what he brings. So I think, for what we've got available and who's fit, I think I would go with pretty much the team that I just mentioned, but I'd have Rogic ahead of McGregor. That's what I think.
But going on big games, I think you're both right. I think I hadn't thought about this before, but I think he'll play McGregor and Rogic. I think he likes both of them in a big game.
I want us to dominate the ball. I want us to, McGregor and Rogic to be going behind their midfield line, and then Cham and Brown finding them all day. And as soon as you get Rogic on that half turn, you're away. And you can just like, you give it to Sinclair and you know he's going to be direct. You kind of know what's going to happen. And quite often, you know, like he'll give away the ball.
Yeah.
Mm.
Whereas I just want us to be circulating the ball, completely dominating the game, and having them running after us all day on that big pitch.
How do you think?
After that, then put on Sinclair last 20 minutes when they're absolutely done, if you want.
How do you think they'll cope with, you know, how motivated will they be when their chairman came out this week and said, just to let you know, Marty, you're getting fired in the summer?
I think this is his last chance saloon for him. I think he'll use that to basically say to the players, look, you know, the chairman's come out with a statement, the only way I'm staying in this job is if you win today. That's kind of...
I don't even think...
Whether the players want or maybe that's a different story.
I think they could win 10-0 on Sunday and he wouldn't get the job from what Dave King was saying.
Probably.
So, Mark's already said he expects to be 2-0. Stephen, what was your prediction for the score?
I don't know. I'm not sure about this one. 3-1 probably. I think it might be. I think they might take the lead. I think they're quite good at coming out the blocks pretty quickly and getting at us. But I think their energy levels aren't at our level, and I think that's why we won the last game, even with 10 men. I think they ran out of puff a wee bit, and obviously missed a massive sitter. But I think 3-1. I think it'll probably be level by half time, and I think Celtic will just take over. Well, hopefully, what Mark's saying about possession, I think we'll run them ragged, hopefully. Because it'll be a decent pitch. I'd like to think so. Unless Queen's Park have messed it up. But.
Yeah, but don't forget, we're playing second. They'll be in a game the day before. Are we? Is that right?
Aye.
So.
And what about yourself, Harry? Prediction?
Yeah, 2-0 or 3-1, I'm going to go with. I wouldn't be overly surprised if they scored equally on the big Hampden pitch. I could see a situation where they just actually never looked like scoring. We just passed the ball to death like we've done all season. So, anyway, I'm feeling a bit down that the podcast has been a bit negative for a team that's 2 wins away from 3 wins away from completing a treble.
That's me never getting back on, that's for sure. just to bring a bit of humour onto the pod, what about the SPFL fixture list?
Oh, don't
still
even,
not being out.
Don't even get me started on that, man. The top six has been known for over 10 days.
What's the problem? Is it the TV companies in the league are trying to get the Celtic Rangers fixture and the police are saying no? Because of what I've heard, the fixture's going to be the 29th of April. There's a rumour going about that the police have been told no days off.
So
that day,
the fixture, like 3-4 weeks ago, was agreed in principle as being 12 noon on Sunday, the whatever day, I think it's the 22nd. Aye, Sunday the 22nd at 12 noon. I was agreed in principle based on the expectation that we'd have won the league by then. Then it's come down, we can't do it, waiting to see if it's a title decider. Which is not a title decider, because the title's already decided. Everyone knows we're winning the title. There was never any competition. It's not like, you know, Rangers might finish fourth, probably finish third or second, but they could finish fourth. They were never in. There was never a title race. We have a winner-takes-all game with a binary outcome on Sunday against Rangers.
We 50-50 coming from all angles all over the city.
Yeah, coming to a neutral venue. We're talking about the only possible outcomes of the game if we play them to win the league are we win the league that week or the following week. And if we win it that week, there'll be 52,000 Celtic fans and 7,000 Rangers fans in the ground. Mm. At Celtic's own ground. It couldn't be easier to police. I don't know what the knickers and the twist is about. I mean, not only have we got the cups, if the draw had been different, there's a possibility that on the 19th of May, we could have been playing Rangers at 3 o'clock on a Saturday.
Yep.
Where if we'd won, we'd win back-to-back trebles. And they can police that again in a neutral venue where there's going to be 20-odd thousand Rangers fans and 20-odd thousand Celtic fans. I just don't see why. So Celtic are really pushing for it, because if it's not that game, I think we'll be away to Hibs.
Mm-hmm.
And Celtic will then have, as seems to be every bloody season, we'll win the league with 2,000 or 3,000 fans present.
Yeah.
So Celtic are really keen for. And what happens if we go to, what if you then look at when they could, what fixtures they can do when? What if we go to Easter Road and lose?
Yeah. Do we not have three home games left?
Yeah, so we get three home games, right?
Rangers, Aberdeen, Kilmarnock.
Rangers, Aberdeen, Kilmarnock. So,
I'd imagine the Kilmarnock's going to be the last day of the season.
Well, because exactly, so they're not going to have us pick up the trophy against Rangers, right? No. So that means Rangers needs to be earlier than that, which means if they have the first game, what are they going to do? Away, just to be safe, away to Hibs, home to Aberdeen, away to Hearts, home to Rangers. Home to Kilmarnock.
Yeah.
But then it's all to do with TV dates as to when fits, because the Celtic Rangers game's on Sky, and people who've, you know, I can't remember, people who've studied it more than me have looked into the available times, and the other problem is with the games that Sky want, have got down in England, there's not really many other available slots in the other games.
Mm.
Plus one of those games in the split is a Wednesday night as well. So I think that's why it's taking so long, because basically Sky are saying, no, that's the only date that fits.
It's a complete scaremongering that's going on as well. I don't know if you heard Les Gray, some former police guy who quite high up in the police on BBC Radio Scotland last night. He was coming up with about how people have been murdered after this game, and a boy had his throat slashed after an Old Firm game, as he called it. And I'm thinking, that wasn't even a Celtic Rangers game. That was 1995 after a Partick Thistle game. You know, so just complete lies being made up just to...
We've had a title decider.
Yeah, we had it
in
2012. Yeah.
And we lost
and
it. And it was, but it was at Ibrox.
Yeah. I know, it's...
It's just...
We're the only country, I think, in sort of European football, or even world football, that would deliberately try and not have its biggest game showcased in such a manner. I mean, you're in Argentina, Mark, yeah?
Uh-huh.
What would they... So if Racing and Independiente are going for a title, or at least one of them's going for a title, or Boca or River are going for a title, are they going to avoid having these teams play each other? I know the fans are the fans not a band away from home?
They are just now. But even like when teams used to end up leveling points, they used to have a playoff game to
determine
the champion.
I remember one about 10 years ago, it was San Lorenzo, Boca and... Yeah. One other, I think it was Tigre, yeah, and Boca lost the last game of the round robin, but won the title. So
yeah, it was happening.
There are no shrinking violets in Buenos Aires, that's for sure. But I don't think the issue is the game, because I think there was only 8 arrests at the last Celtic Rangers game. I think the issue is what they're trying to argue is away from, you know, the match and the pubs in Ayrshire and the town and all that sort of stuff. But that's a social issue, you know, it's not a football issue.
It just really, the other thing that pisses me off about it is, as a paying customer, my wife's giving me a really hard time because she's trying to plan some things in April and May, and I'm saying, I don't know, maybe that may be the Celtic Rangers game, that may be the day we win the league. You know, can we do it on the Saturday? Don't know. We may be playing on the Saturday. We may be playing the Sunday. I don't know. I mean, you can't even run your life. Just sitting there saying, no, I've no idea.
The fact that they've not even produced the bottom six fixtures where there's no issue, it just is baffling. Because you've basically got 12 teams with 12 sets of fans, no being able to book buses, tickets, hotels, flights, whatever. They've got 10 days, if even that. It's a shambles.
And no update, no dear paying customer who pay the wages and keep the game going. Just to let you know, we're planning to have the fixtures out on this date. It's just nothing, just radio silence on it. We'll not talk to you because you don't deserve it, because you're all scum anyway, and we don't really give a shit about you. I mean, we know that's...
Who said this?
Oh, it's copyright Scottish football since 1888. We can't stand you. We all wish the game would happen without you.
I liked how this was going to be a part when we were going to pep up the podcast.
I think we're just laughing at the authorities. I think you're just going to laugh at the situation. You know, it's all right for us if we're based in Glasgow and, you know, and we don't have work commitments that weekend or whatever, but...
Yeah, you should think about me. I travel back and forth every home game from Buenos Aires.
I know, yeah,
That's why you've got bags under your eyes, Mark.
You're probably going to have to fly to Lisbon and then up to Heathrow and then to Glasgow. I mean, you're £5,000 round trip.
Absolute nightmare.
Anyway, on all that, I think this is definitely the most upbeat podcast of the season so far.
I was glad to be a part of it.
So on that,
we've picked three games or two games in a row that were utter dull and dire to come on and do this. So
on that, I will say thanks very much, and next podcast will obviously be after we've got to the Scottish Cup final, and we'll not be whinging.
Yes.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast. As I always say at this part, there'll be more along soon. Get yourself onto the Celtic FC Foundation website. Check all the marvellous things that they are doing. I was at a Celtic FC Foundation event tonight as I'm doing this part of the podcast, which is way tonight. And if every single person in the support could get along to that, we'd be raising 100 times as much as we did. It was absolutely fantastic. Anyway, enough of me. That was Stephen Ray making his debut with Mark Cooper and myself. Hopefully it wasn't too negative. And you'll download the next one. Anyway, we've got the Rangers game. Hopefully we thump them. This is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.
All the while, in this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring